Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I love this song. Could just let it play all morning. It's fantastic.
I don't think I've heard this song.
No, you haven't seen any of the Lizzo videos that are going around on social media, and like there's a dance to the song.
No, I didn't even know it was
and
Lizzo.
Everything. So anyway,
I'm not hip, Matt.
No, apparently not. Great, great tune. Big Lizzo fan over here. It's the Morning Rush, day before Canada Day. It's Matt Harris in for Bill Carroll. That is Corey Price, and not a Lizzo fan. And it's the last day before a long weekend, so things are good. The vibe is good in the city, and road closures went into effect yesterday on in and around the Parliament Hill area, and things are, you know, moving and shaking downtown. There was a video released on social media of a small convoy in and around the IKEA area being stopped before it got downtown, and you might be getting down a bit of a slippery slope here with not allowing people to come down and protest, right? Right. I mean, you do have a right to that to a certain extent, and that was pretty far away from the downtown core. There are some drastic measures being taken for sure, and you'll never really know if it's overkill until it happens, right? I mean, there's really no way. People were on edge a little bit in the city over what happened a few months ago. There's some people in the city that like to act like downtown was some kind of war zone in February, and it definitely wasn't, but it was a major inconvenience. I'm not here to say that it wasn't. And there's this idea that that's not happening again, right? Big police presence this weekend to make sure that doesn't happen again. And I'd like to know why it was allowed to kind of devolve into that in the first place. One of the things was this social media video here. We grabbed a couple clips from it. A guy's named Chris Dacey, who, going through his social media yesterday, that guy seems like he's a bit of a treat. But anyway, it was part of a thing that was pulled over by Ottawa police. So here's a quick little video of that just to set the scene here.
Hey, Dacey here. So I am just across the street from our muster point at IKEA, and we were pulled off the road by OPS on motorcycles before we got here. We didn't make it on the highway. We are stopped on the highway, four OPS officers on motorcycles, cut into our convoy and pulled us over. We're stopped here, waiting for permission from OPS to continue.
I'd never heard of this guy until yesterday, and I went through the social media once I saw that video, and it looks like they're camped out, it doesn't look like, they said they were on social media, camped out in Renfrew. And I was just going through it. It's just a bunch of people with Canadian flags yelling freedom at some Renfrew. I don't know where it was exactly, if it was a campground or some kind of rural property. And I just can't figure out for the life of me what they're on about. Nobody gives you really a clear message, right? Every time I say that, I get some texts, and it's like, we're waiting here for Justin Trudeau to resign. We're waiting so they stop these vaccine passports and the digital ID to track us. We're waiting for somebody to acknowledge the sudden adult death symptoms and people just dropping dead. And like, all right. So long list of grievances and really no cohesive plan for anything, but that seems to be what we're dealing with here. Councillor Matthew Fleury, city councillor for the Byward Market area down this part of downtown. So one of the two city councillors whose areas would be greatly affected by this, talked about the use of the vehicle control zone when speaking to CTV yesterday.
Obviously, the right to access Parliament Hill, walk through the public roads is continuing, but the use of a vehicle as a weapon is not. And preventing any potential permanent setup of sort is an important step to protect the capital city.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't want to have people being stopped for coming to protest, right? I might look at whatever they've got going on there and think it's absolutely ridiculous, but you may look at many protests that are going on in and around the downtown core, and Parliament Hill attracts them pretty much daily. Not to this size, but, you know, we all live here. We all know you walk down there, you see people protesting just about anything. And a lot of times I walk by and think, wasn't even on my radar. But, you know, good for you, carry on. And you don't want to lose that. I think we do run a risk of doing that if we take things a bit too seriously and just shut everything down. But, I mean, you can come out here without any vehicles. Would you put a Canadian flag on your car this week, though? Knowing what that it's been taken over, right? I mean, I saw the video, that the audio we played there right at the start, that Chris guy. Every vehicle, big Canadian flags on it. And there was a time not too long ago, I think I probably still have them somewhere, in a box somewhere, the Canadian flag, car flag. And this would be a good time of the year to put it out, right? For a couple of days, you put it out. And that carries a negative connotation on it now. The interim police chief, Steve Bell, says people are well prepared here.
We've talked for a number of days about all the planning and preparation we had and the expectation of people attending. And I think what you're seeing is those plans come into action and us being out there and vigilant around who's attending and trying to make sure that people understand that it's going to be a safe place on Canada Day and you should come down and enjoy the festivities.
Am I the only one, and this isn't a shot at the police chief, it isn't. But am I the only one who, the more I hear public officials tell you how safe it is and to come down, the less I want to come down on Canada Day? I can't be the only one who feels that, right? At the end of the day, on the last time everyone was down here, there didn't end up being any real security concerns. There may have been concerns that police had, but nothing happened. And that is probably because of the work of police. Now, maybe there was some wrong intelligence. I haven't heard of any guns being pulled out of vehicles like they thought that they had down there. But just the more we're told by the police or the politicians or whoever it is that, yeah, it's safe. Don't worry. It's safe. You can come on down. I'm like, I think I'll just ride this one out at home, guys. But thanks for that. And maybe I'm alone in that, but that's what I think when I hear the police chief say that. And that's, the sad part about me bringing that up is there's nothing he could say to convince me otherwise at this point. And I think it's probably irrational. I'm willing to sit here and admit that. Do I think anything's going to happen? No. But the more I hear that, the more I hear people say, yeah, it's okay. Come on downtown. It's going to be safe. We've got this figured out. Like, that's actually not, I think you mean that to be comforting, but I actually don't find it comforting at all. Steve Ball, who's the president of the Ottawa-Gatineau Hotel Association, so the police chief is Steve Bell. Steve Ball is with the Hotel Association, says some guests have canceled reservations because of, Maybe what I just said. So sorry, Steve, that point of view probably doesn't help with the hotel business out there. But, you know, that's just how I feel right now. But he says he believes police have their plan in place.
There's some concern about access to getting to the hotels and what a protest may look like. But, you know, I've been involved with briefings with OPS, the Auto Police Services, and I'm very confident that they're well-equipped and ready to handle anything that gets thrown at us this weekend.
So that's where we're at going into a holiday weekend. You know, we should be more focused on, you know, fireworks and bands. I guess it's LeBreton Flats this year, not Parliament Hill. But, you know, we're planned for something. We're planning for something big. So there's obviously, and I mean, when you saw that parking lot in Renfrew, wherever they were parked, there were clearly a lot of vehicles there. It's hard to judge that. I mean, if it was really going to be that big or as big as the time before, you would have seen vehicles driving across the country. Remember last time it was like 100,000 trucks are heading to Ottawa. And I watched the video. I'm like, well, I see like 55 in that video. And I mean, unless it picks up a lot of steam through Alberta, we're not getting anywhere near that. There were definitely more than I thought at the time. It never got anywhere near as big as organizers said it was going to, but it's impossible to say it wasn't a big deal in the city. But there's not even that buzz, right? And at this point, I really truly believe that many of the people who came down here in February, who were just, you know, young, mostly men, but you saw women there as well, bringing in people, bringing their kids and like young families who just thought, okay, we've gone a little crazy with these vaccine mandates and some of these rules. I've had 3 shots. I can't do anything. I understand that mindset in February. I was borderline there. I looked at the protests that were going on. I thought that these people don't speak for me. I'm not going anywhere near this thing, but I could understand that mindset. That was 4.5 months ago. I don't see how you have that mindset now. So that just cuts the amount of people who would even be interested in this massively. But that also leaves more of the radicals who are going to be there. So we're probably right to be concerned. And like I said, when I hear people say you've got nothing to worry about, it's going to be safe downtown, that has the opposite effect on me. And I'm like, I'm staying home for this one, guys. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
It's been 61 business days since Daisy ordered her passport.
61. That's where we're at. You know, the majority of people get it after 40 business days. So that's where we're at.
What's
on that.
It like being special?
Yeah, exactly.
You're not like the majority.
No end in sight. If it doesn't come today, which I mean, I don't have any real hope for that, then we're into 13 weeks. At it. But a lot of major updates last night on the travel front here. So Air Canada announced that starting tomorrow, they're going to be canceling a ton of flights in and around mostly Montreal and Toronto, although there are ones right across the country because of the fact that they say they're just too stretched right now. They need to cancel the flights to because they can't properly staff them. It came after yesterday, the head of the airport in Montreal had basically asked for exactly this. He said, listen, it's clear that it's just chaos at airports. We don't have the staff to deal with a lot of these problems. We need you to start canceling flights. So Air Canada was the first one yesterday to come out. It was around just after 8 o'clock last night. They sent out an email to passengers saying 154 flights a day will be canceled in July and August. They said before that they were operating about 1,000 flights a day. So most of them, like I said, Toronto and Montreal, because we got new flight data or a new analysis of flight cancellations that was released yesterday. We talked about it briefly at the end of the show yesterday, and it showed Montreal and Toronto airports were the worst, but you know, cancellations and delays at airports right across the country were very, very common right now. The other thing is just the luggage situation going on, mostly at Pearson. The videos on all over social media over the last week or so, it seems like either it's gotten more attention in the last few days or it's gotten worse. Here's a man who was talking to CTV after he just couldn't find his bags in Toronto.
I was here for 4.5 hours yesterday, only to be told that my luggage is somewhere in the airport, but they have no idea where.
That's where we're at. You do see, you know, I think some people lose sight of the fact that you're not the only person in the airport that's dealing with these kind of issues. So but you're getting a lot of stories. I know it can be at times a first world problem, but it needs to be fixed. Something needs to be done here. Let's skip ahead to Transport Minister Omar El Gabra, who was asked about the case of a woman who had to sleep on the floor with her kids at Pearson because they couldn't find their bags.
Airlines are also responsible for ensuring that their passengers are treated fairly.
The CEO of Montreal's airport says, his name's Philip Renville, says they need to cancel the flights to get everything back on track.
It's likely either the frequencies, the number of flights that we'll have on a given destination, or destinations themselves.
I think it's a pretty safe assumption to say that other airlines are going to follow the lead of Air Canada. But big news last night, they were the first ones to come down and say 154 flights a day in July and August. So like I said, that starts tomorrow, being canceled. And I would expect we'll see other airlines follow suit in the next couple of days here. But one of the things that I couldn't help but laugh about yesterday is, you know, after hearing about just all how big of an issue ArriveCan has been at times, that app is going to be used at the border until at least September 30th. So don't expect dropping of ArriveCan to try to slow things down anytime soon. They've dropped the vaccine mandates, but the government announcing yesterday that ArriveCan will remain in place until at least September 30th. So just a mess all around. Speaking of getting passports, did you see this? There's a story in the Ottawa Citizen about a guy who was wanted for murder, who was arrested at the airport with a fake with somebody else's passport. Did you see this story?
Oh, no, I didn't.
So he had, I guess, accomplice, or was charged as an accomplice. And part of the allegations that he was facing were that he had gotten his passport and given it to this other guy. The other guy booked a trip, and he was arrested for these murders at the Ottawa airport using the other guy's passport. Now, police apparently couldn't prove that he knew he was trying to flee a crime, but he was charged with some passport fraud. That guy got his expedited passport. Now, it was before all the chaos, but that guy got his passport in 3 business days.
Remember that? Remember when that was possible?
So everybody else is hearing their passport horror stories right now. And the Ottawa Citizen story has this guy getting his passport that he gives to a guy wanted for murder, gets it in 3 days and heads out there. So that was just kind of an aside in the travel nightmare. But the travel nightmares continue. And I would expect news on more canceled flights from airport from other airlines, maybe even as early as today. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
It's been
61
business days since Daisy ordered her passport.
3, 2, 1. Lights. Here we go. Camera. Stand by to action.
At the movies with Richard Krause.
Good morning, Richard. How are you this morning?
Good, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. It's a Thursday. It feels like a Friday. Things are great. It's fantastic.
I know.
People are excited about the Minions movie. Just want to acknowledge off the top that we're not going to review it today because you haven't seen it yet, but there's a buzz around it for sure.
There's a huge buzz around it. I'm seeing it later today, so normally I would have reviewed it tomorrow with you, but maybe we'll talk about it next week. But by then, I think everyone that will have wanted to see the Minions movies, and there's a lot of them out there, will have already seen it.
Yeah, for sure. There's a Cineplex that I drive by on my way home from work, and they've had that big yellow guy right on the poster for like a month now. People are excited, but you're kind of excited about this movie here, and I watched the trailer last night because I hadn't heard of it before you sent it, and it looks pretty good. Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
All right, so I'm making like a little documentary.
Oh, it's like a movie, but nobody has any lines, and nobody even knows what it is while they're making it. No?
Tell me about what's life like.
It's pretty much common knowledge that it takes at least 20 shells to have a community. My cousin fell asleep in a pocket, and that's why I don't like the saying everything comes out of the wash, because sometimes it doesn't, or sometimes it does, and they're just like a completely different person.
Okay, so that was the voice of Jenny Slate as a character called Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, and the title is perfect. I mean, it just tells you exactly what this is. Marcel is a little mollusk, a tiny little shell, about an inch high, one big googly eye, and a pair of shoes, and it can walk around, and it has that cute little voice. And they've been making these movies as short films on YouTube for a very long time, for 10 years probably. And now it's a feature playing in theaters this weekend, And it's about Marcel. Marcel lives in an Airbnb now. The people that used to live there broke up. They got a divorce. And at some point, as they were moving stuff out, most of Marcel's extended family, all the other mollusks, were taken as well. And they're somewhere else. So it's just Marcel and his grandmother, who is voiced by Isabella Rossellini now, living in this house. A documentary filmmaker moves in, discovers Marcel, and starts making a video about him, posted on YouTube. It gets millions of hits, and Marcel sees this as an opportunity, because they're reaching so many people, to see if he can find out where his family is, where his extended family is. Lots more stuff happens here, but I don't want to give anything away, because this is an absurd premise, a little talking mollusk and its grandmother, but it is so warm, intimate, personal, poignant, absurd, and wonderful that this is probably my favorite movie of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It sounds like a kid's movie, and it's not. There are some pretty heavy themes explored here, but it's also absolutely hilarious. But I saw it in an audience full of film critics. So there's, 10 or 15 of us sitting in a big theater watching this. And film critics, as I've often said on the show, are the worst people in the world. They don't.
I was going to say, that sounds like a tough crowd, actually.
No, it is. It's a tough crowd. And you can hear people, laughing and crying at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Marcel, theaters for this great. One.
Yeah, you have to go to the theater to see it, and it is worth it.
That's fantastic. Okay, I was not expecting, because I watched the trailer and it seems really cute and it got my attention right away, but that's some high praise from you. I love it. What about The Forgiven?
The Forgiven, also playing in theaters, has a great cast. It's Ralph Fiennes and Jessica Chastain, and they play a married couple who are unhappy. They bicker all the time, but they're held together by the glue that keeps them together, I guess, is their wealth. No one wants to leave because they enjoy this tremendous lifestyle where they can do pretty much whatever they want because they're so wealthy. So they're in Morocco. They're on their way to a party. They've spent the afternoon drinking wine, and then they hop into a car. They're on their way to a party in kind of a remote location in this mansion that friends of theirs have built. And along the way, a young Moroccan boy comes out, just pops out of nowhere, and they run him down. And he's killed on the scene. So they load him into the back of the car. They take him to this party, and the police are called, and the police come, and they realize, well, this is a house full of extraordinarily wealthy people. This is going to be declared an accident one way or the other. So they declare it an accident. The next day, the boy's father shows up and says, as is our tradition, you killed my son. You have to come to the funeral. And he says that to the Ralph Fiennes character. And then it goes from there. So what you have here, the story kind of splits off into two different directions at that point. Jessica Chastain's character stays at the party and enjoys the hedonistic benefits of being at that party, while David, the arrogant drunk guy who killed this young boy, gets a humbling. And it's his path is much different. And so it's kind of fascinating to watch these two really great actors play out these different scenarios. But I kind of wanted some sort of closure. There is something that happens that provides, I suppose, a modicum of closure here. But I wanted a little bit more from this one. I wanted something that just didn't leave all these story threads dangling in the wind by the time we get to the end. But tremendous performances, absolutely tremendous performances, but kind of a frustrating movie.
Okay, so one really good one pretty good one. So we're doing pretty well so far. Let's check out Mr. Malcolm's List.
I need your assistance. There is a gentleman, Mr. Malcolm. He humiliated me. No. I then found out he had a list.
You have a list of qualifications for a bride.
I would love for Mr. Malcolm to receive the comeuppance he deserves.
Plus, it could be rather fun.
If we present you as the perfect woman, then he discovers he does not meet the requirements on your list. That would be a perfect sort of poetic justice.
So the petticoats may be more pronounced, and the dialogue sounds like it's right off the pages of Jane Austen. But Mr. Malcolm's List, which is playing in theaters right now, make no mistake, this is a rom-com. It's a romantic comedy. It is the only thing missing here, I suppose, is Drew Barrymore or Katherine Hagel from the heyday of rom-coms, because it follows the template to a T. But, you know, rom-coms are all about the destination. They're not so much, or they're all about the journey, rather. Not so much about the destination. You know how they're going to end. So then, as long as they keep things entertaining along the way, as people get together, they break up, they fight, whatever happens to them, you want to be entertained by that. And Mr. Malcolm's List manages to do that. They've got some really good actors in here, Theo James, and Frida Pinto is in here. So you've got, you know, a very appealing cast with a story that is predictable. But, you know, as I say, rom-coms are all about the journey, and this one's a pretty good trip.
I think there's three good choices here this weekend. That's fantastic. And then I can't imagine that Minions would be a bad choice for the kids. So a lot to choose from for the Canada Day weekend. And at risk of talking about the same movie a few weeks in a row, because I know you and Bill talked about it a lot last week, I did watch Hustle on Netflix after your review. I loved that movie, Richard. I thought Adam Sandler, you know, and I know what you think of Adam Sandler, and he could be a bit goofy. I actually don't mind the goofy. I kind of enjoy it, but this was a really good movie.
Yeah, I was so surprised by that movie because I'm not an Adam Sandler fan or a basketball fan, but you don't have to be to enjoy this movie. Like all really good sports movies, it's not really about the sports. It's about the underdog, you know, rising up to show what they can do. It's about, you know, the skill and precision that it takes to become an elite athlete. But you could apply that to any number of professions. It's kind of a universal story about just trying to be your best. And Adam Sandler, when he wants to, can hand in a heck of a performance, and he's done so again in Hustle. You know, he did it in Uncut Gems, Rain Over Me, Punch Drunk Love. You know, he's one of those rare performers who people will stay with, whether he's doing something that has, you know, a kind of serious edge to it, like Uncut Gems, or whether it's, you know, the goofy Billy Madison-style movies that he makes and continues to make. So, yeah, this is it's called Hustle. It is on Netflix right now, and it's so worth a look. And everyone that I've talked to, and this is anecdotal, I know, but everyone that I've talked to has really enjoyed it. So if you're looking for something to watch over the weekend, that's a good choice.
And, you know, I guess we're finally at a point where we've just accepted the fact that there's going to be a lot of good movies that are just going to skip theaters, other than really small releases. They're going right to streaming. And is that still a point of contention with some people in Hollywood?
Yeah, for sure it is. I mean, I think it's an interesting phase in Hollywood that we're in right now, because the pandemic got people used to watching bigger movies at home and seeing movies released direct to Disney Plus or Netflix or whatever it was. So, you know, it used to be that if you wanted to see Deadpool, you went to the theater because you're a Deadpool fan or a Ryan Reynolds fan. Now, Ryan Reynolds' last couple of movies have gone straight to Netflix and garnered huge worldwide audiences. More people saw them on Netflix than ever would have seen them in the theater. But I think it sort of cheapens the theatrical experience a little bit. And by that I mean, if you know that you can watch, you know, the next new big Disney movie on Disney Plus in a month, it lessens your incentive to go to the theater. The movie-going experience is always better in a theater. And I know people will argue that they've got giant TV screens at home.
Yeah, but they also have short attention spans, Richard. That's my problem.
And you're not really paying the same kind of attention to a film. You're not often seeing the picture the director wanted, the sound mix the director wanted. It's a much different kind of experience. It's an experience. It's just a much different one. And I think the theatrical one is a preferable one. But because this window between playing in theaters and moving to a streaming service has narrowed so much, it's making a difference. And I think that's one of the things that hurt Lightyear, which came out a week ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago now. And it's a movie that made $50 million on its opening weekend, which for a Pixar movie is quite low. It's a lot for almost anybody else, but it's a low figure for a Pixar movie. And people are saying, well, there's any number of reasons. The story wasn't directly linked to Toy Story, so that's kind of a problem to the Toy Story movie. So people didn't really know what to make of it. But also, I think a big chunk of it is that they know that this is going to end up on Disney Plus fairly quickly, and they don't need to rush out and see it in the theater. And it's too bad, because it's a beautiful looking movie in the theater. And if you go see it on IMAX like I did, you're kind of enveloped by it. It's really wonderful.
Great to talk to you, Richard. Thanks for doing this early this week. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Happy Canada Day.
You too. The Last Call podcast with Richard Kress, available now on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. Good morning, Doctor. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's Thursday before a long weekend, so it's all good. The European Union banned flavored tobacco products, heated tobacco products. And I said vape earlier. It is some vape as well, but trying to get the smoking numbers down. And you see governments trying to do this from time to time. The U.S. government kind of banned Juul products earlier this week. In Canada, we have now warnings on every single cigarette, and yet smoking rates are still, they're much lower than they used to be, obviously, but they're still fairly high in our community. What else can we do to bring it down?
I think there's always going to be, you're never going to get things to zero in anything, especially with regards to addiction. So you are going to have people that are more hardcore smokers, those that incorporate that into their social activities. But when you look at these particular stories, the one in the EU is it really dealt with only vaping products that used tobacco, right? It didn't ban the e-cigarettes that only contain nicotine. So in this case, the story is more eliminating sources of tobacco, which are certainly carcinogenic, versus the lesser of the evil, which is just using products that contain only nicotine, which satisfy the addiction. And in the United States, the Juul issue is that in the U.S., if 6.7 million, this is from CNN, 6.7 million e-cigarette products in the United States, the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, has reviewed and taken action on 99% of them, and 1 million, so while Juul is making, making noise about this, 1 million of those 6.7 had their authorization denied, because there was insufficient evidence provided to the FDA that they are safe to use and do not constitute a risk to public health. And that's what happened with Juul, is that they asked for submissions. The FDA had no regulations on e-cigarettes prior to 2016. And then they finally said, okay, we have to regulate this market. And they said to the companies, you have until 2020 to provide submissions to show that your products fulfill safety protocols, or that they are safe for public health consumption, and toxicology reports, that is the chemical compounds that are in there, what do they actually do to the human body? And so they waited, and then the pandemic came, so they extended the time, and Juul provided some submissions, but the FDA said it lacked sufficient evidence regarding that toxicology, that is how harmful it is. And so they basically said, you can't sell your products. And now there's an injunction. Court has given an injunction delaying that. And, the saga continues. But I like to see regulation. I mean, that's fine. I mean, the onus is on the companies to provide evidence that what they are marketing is going to be safe, and provide, as we circle back around, provide people with the opportunity to reduce their dependence on cigarettes in this case, and not really promote a new lifestyle of using these products, right? It's they are chemical compounds. They are, and that in itself doesn't mean that there's harm with it, but you have to understand that there are consequences to long-term use of anything. And so some are helpful, some are not. And so you have to ask, what is the benefit of using these over the long term versus trying to help someone stop their smoking? And it also depends on the willingness of the person who wants to smoke and wants to stop, the motivation to do so. Some people have no desire to do that. That's their choice. And others do. And so for those that do, there are many things that are available now to help people with smoking cessation. There are oral medications that mimic nicotine that reduce the reduce your craving for nicotine and help people stop smoking. There are vaping products that can be used. So there are ways to try and help, but ultimately it's ensuring that what is being used is safe for people to use to try and stop.
This is very anecdotal, but I just think it's interesting. You know, you in your life know people that are addicted to a bunch of different things, right? Drugs, yeah. Alcohol, and some of them don't think they have a problem. But the one thing that I find interesting is the people that I know who smoke cigarettes, almost none of them enjoy doing it, right? Like I have friends that are, I would say, alcoholics. Maybe they don't agree with that, but they enjoy drinking. At least to a certain level. I don't know anyone in my life who smokes who actually enjoys doing it. They just can't stop. They're addicted to it. And to me, it's interesting that tobacco seems to be the one addiction that they don't seem to find any joy in it anymore. They just can't stop doing it.
Yeah, one of the key things about addictions, and that tends to get glossed over, is that a person doesn't set out to become an alcoholic. A person doesn't set out to become addicted to opioids. There are reasons why people do things initially. For many reasons, it's to escape either from mental illness. I'm not saying cigarette smokers all have mental illness, but just in terms of you looking at addictions and what it does to your body, there is a release or an escape for people to deal with the issues that are confronting them. And they're maladaptive, but nevertheless, people do that. And then the drug takes over, right? It takes a hold on you, and despite your best efforts, and that goes to the cigarette smoking people that you know, Matt, is that it just takes over. You can't. You're fighting a certain aspect of your brain that is beyond conscious control. Right? It really just grabs you, and you get hooked on that chemical agent because your body needs it. That's essentially what's happening. It's requiring that in order to function now. And so it makes it very difficult to try and stop. And so you have to take sometimes a stepwise approach to help people gradually reduce. Some people can stop cold turkey for certain things, but in others and for other drugs and even nicotine, it can be really difficult just to stop. And so you have to try to gradually reduce the dose. And sometimes it requires, you know, a second person to help you out to meet out the dose of the drug so that you're not just confronted with the whole supply and try to reduce it on your own. And you see that with opioid reduction, cigarette smoking, lots of different types of medications where you have to gradually reduce the use. And so it's a trap. It really is a trap. And you can't start blaming people for not being able to stop. Until you walk in their shoes, it's very difficult to understand. But at the same time, we have to have the means to help people do so should they desire to do that. And that's sort of where we're at.
Yeah, and not everyone, well, many people aren't going to be able to quit cold turkey. And if they could, no. They would have done so already, right? So
that's exactly right.
That's what we're exactly dealing right. with. Yeah, if it was easy, they would have done it because it's not cheap. It takes a lot of money and time and all that stuff. Thanks for this, Doctor. We'll talk to you on Monday.
All right, Matt. Have a good holiday.
You as well. Dr. Barry Dworkin, Medical Myth Busting.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
The Morning Rush, it's Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll. Just hearing that commercial for the Ottawa Redblacks, the cheese curd, what was it? Deep fried cheese curd poutine? Sounds pretty good here. Bunda and I getting hungry.
Yeah.
Based on that.
Fried cheese curd nachos is what.
Nachos, yeah, sorry, okay. Yeah.
The wow items of the game. They did this a couple years ago.
Cheese curd poutine would just be, you know, poutine. So sorry about that.
Deep fried curds, I guess, maybe.
I guess that would be different. But yeah, the food game has been stepped up a bit there for sure. Mm-hmm. You got to go too. I know you're on the sidelines. It's not quite the same. You want me to like sneak one down to you or something?
If it's good, maybe. Just we have like a period. You know, I only do about one to two hits maybe at the max per game. So if you're sitting kind of near the south side somewhere, you could spot me and you're like, wow, these nachos are unreal. Then yeah, I might come over for like a mouthful. Just hook me up, bud.
Run right down there in a TV timeout.
The wow items of the games, though, I remember they had it a couple years ago and they had some pretty cool things, but the giant cookie ice cream sandwich was the one that I remember most that I was able to get my hands on after one of the games. So I was pretty excited about that, and it did not disappoint.
No, all right. So, and I don't think people in the Glebe will be too happy with the fireworks display post game that we've been promised, but I'm looking forward to that. So it should be a fun time. They play the BC Lions tonight, and we'll both be there. Bund is working. I'm just going to enjoy the atmosphere, get out there and yell out Northside sucks a bit. And
yeah, wear your red. It's the red out game as well that you heard in the promo. So wear your red for Canada Day. And you might, you know, get pulled over, or you might be asked if you're part of a convoy, even if you're at the game, you're close enough down. I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, I know you're wearing red, you're carrying the flags down Bank Street. Like, the Glebe is going to be on alert tonight,
man. I don't envy the cops trying to deal with, you know, everybody wearing red and Canadian flags. And even if you just, you know, half the time on a normal Canada Day, how many times would you see someone with a Canadian flag kind of like wrapped around them or over,
no, that was,
over their shoulder.
Yeah, that was my point earlier. Yeah. Like, they've kind of ruined the Canadian flag for us there. But no, bring it out. Enjoy it. The next couple of days, we need to show the flag some love here. And it'll be a fun time. If I see you there, just say hello, and it'll be fun to get out and see that. Like, we're in long weekend mode here on the show, in the city. I mean, And long weekend mode normally is much more pleasant than this. I mean, there's clearly an edge to all of this going on. We've got some, you know, road closures in and around the downtown core, and police even breaking up some of those rallies earlier today. But, you know, it's still a long weekend. It's still looking pretty decent weather-wise, except for maybe a bit touch and go at times tomorrow, which unfortunately, you know, is the big day. I understand that, but today looks good. Saturday looks really good. Sunday, even into Monday, as you go back to work, things look good for sure. And by the end of the day today, I know I was getting harped on earlier in the week for saying school was over and people were airing their grievances. By the end of the day today, it's all, unless you got to do summer school, and then you're on your own with that one. I do know for a fact that summer is over, but it's not all about, you know, convoys and protests in Canada Day. The LRT inquiry is still going on. It's day 14 today with the mayor testifying later today. But on day 13, it was some city councilors that were there Wednesday talking about the testing data. You know, we keep going back to those 12 days of testing and that things aren't too good. Councillor Diane Deans was one of the people on the stand yesterday. Says more information should have been made available.
We're a public corporation spending public dollars, and we should not be hiding that kind of information from public view and from the decision makers and the people that have a duty of oversight.
Sarah Wright Gilbert, Citizen Transit Commissioner, says the council and Transit Commission lacked information.
That information was being withheld from council and Transit Commission. It's trying to figure out why all of a sudden our brand new system has all of these issues.
City Councilor Catherine McKenney testified that the criteria for the rail system was adjusted at some point as well.
The metrics had been adjusted. Was that the memo that was circulated when Mr. Manconi announced that trial running was successful?
I believe it's the same one. It was near the end of August, yes.
And Councillor Alan Hubley, who's chair of the Transit Commission, was asked about that WhatsApp group we focused on a bit yesterday. That had come down in the testifying on Tuesday with John Manconi. And was asked about that some of the city officials, including the head of OC Transpo and the mayor, were getting some form of communication through WhatsApp when the rest of council was not getting anything.
Do you think that the rest of council should have had the benefit of that information?
My recollection is that most of that information, if not all, was eventually shared with council as part of the briefings.
So, like I said, today it's the mayor testifying as part of that. And, well, I guess we'll be following it. Conveniently, I guess, for the mayor, it goes into a long weekend, if anything does come of that. But you'll hear full breakdown of what the mayor had to say on Christy Cameron's show, Ottawa Now, later today. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
You're listening to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Morning Rush, Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll this morning. Couple new names entering the mayoral race yesterday. One of them, who announced yesterday, was a longtime broadcaster, worked here at CFRA in the past, Mark Sutcliffe. He announced yesterday that he is joining the race for mayor. He had a press conference yesterday, gave a sense of his priorities in the race at that event in Kanata yesterday. Here's a bit of Mark Sutcliffe.
We need to restore the reliability of light rail and the confidence in our public transit system. And we need to fix our roads. That's why we need new leadership in Ottawa. We need new leadership that will bring people together from across our community to confront the affordability crisis and make life better and more economical for everyone.
It's clear that this race needed a couple other people to join it, right? I mean, looking down the list, and I would have probably say the two highest profile people in the race before yesterday were former Mayor Bob Chiarelli and current City Councilor Catherine McKenney. And I would assume that Mark Sutcliffe gets put right in that top caliber of candidates. Just need some other voices. I don't know who the best candidate is. I don't know. I mean, there's going to be a full campaign for that, right? Plenty of time to have some debate, and maybe there's another person that we're missing here. There's still a few months to go, but I just felt we needed more than the two. I thought Diane Deans was going to run. She had, you know, shown some interest in doing it. Last week when she announced that she wouldn't, you sort of started to look and go, okay, who's it going to be? Sutcliffe says he's always enjoyed working to improve the city.
The work I have always enjoyed most is when I have teamed up with other people to try to make our city better. All I've ever wanted is to make a difference in this incredible city.
Still doesn't seem like the most exciting race by any means. And I mean, I don't think anyone's listening to that kind of speech and getting overly inspired. But it's good to get another person in there and throw in a few more ideas, because we haven't seen a lot of that throughout this campaign. The other person who had registered, Mike McGuire, who was a runner-up to Jim Watson in the 2014 election, did not hold a press conference or anything yesterday, but we did see his name appear on the Ottawa elections websites once it was refreshed at the end of the day yesterday. There wasn't just Mark Sutcliffe's name added. There was also the Mike McGuire name that was added there as well. The Morning Rush, Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll. This week in Guelph, they're having a debate about whether or not to ban RVs and large trailers from parking in driveways. Now, if you've gone, we don't see it a ton here. It's also apparently banned here. After seeing that, went in and checked what the Ottawa situation is and saw a tweet from Ottawa Bylaw from a while back, but saying you may not park any RV, trailer, or boat longer than 6 meters in your driveway. They can only be parked on the side or rear yard, because sight lines are not interrupted. But it begs the question. I mean, I think it looks bad, but it is your property. Should you be allowed to park RVs and big trailers in your driveway, assuming that they don't, you know, go on to the street level? Are you allowed to park it there? Bunda, you're here with me this morning. You look like a park your trailer in the driveway kind of guy. But no, what do you think? It's your property. You should be able to park whatever you want there, or it looks bad. The city of Ottawa says that it's about making sure you can see if you're driving up the road and it doesn't block your sight line. But what do you think? Property, and you should be able to do what you want, or get that thing out of there?
100%. Because, you know, what if you don't have any a side lot or a backyard? Like, what are you going to do? You have to then pay for storage to put it somewhere? As long as it's not, at the end of the driveway, obstructing view for anybody driving around, I don't know why you would need to be, I never knew that. And it's, how many times can you say, living or driving around a neighborhood, do you see, a boat or anything?
A camping trailer, whatever it might be.
Sitting at the end of a driveway, obstructing views. I can't say I do very often. And if I, you know, maybe I just haven't noticed because I, you know, don't care or don't look for it. But at the same time, like, it's, you know, there's, you know, I grew up in the country where there's trees obstructing, you know, being able to pull out of, you know, a driveway. And that's a lot worse than, you know, seeing anything like this. But it's on your own property and you're doing it. Like I said, if you park it towards the front of your driveway and it's not at the end, like, are you still going to get fined? Like,
well, so here's the problem. Here's what the city of Guelph has realized when they debated this week. And they had the bylaw and they were trying to get rid of it. But that failed. So the bylaw is going to stay in Guelph, same way it stays here. But the problem that they have, and I mean, Ottawa would have the same problem, is it's only enforced. These bylaws are only enforced if your neighbor has a problem with it, right? And so it's like so many other bylaws. So if you live on a street with some neighbors that don't really care, or everyone's doing it, you're totally fine. It's when you get that one picky neighbor. But if you don't have a place to park it, then yeah, I think you do have to store it. But you know that when you buy it. Right. And so it doesn't look great when they're there. But I think, honestly, as long as they're out of the sight line, it may be uncomfortable to look at. It's your property, though.
Yeah.
But where do you draw the line from that, though? Are you okay with, you know, tires being thrown all over the front lawn because, hey, it's your property, go nuts? Or a car being parked there on blocks? We need to develop some kind of property standards at some point and just carry on with a rule that's there. I honestly, until I saw that tweet from Bylaw, I didn't realize it was a problem here as well.
No, and you know, you bring up the neighbor has to complain, and I'd love to say, well, who's really going to complain? But we've seen outdoor rinks have to be removed from front yards and
the little library things that are sitting out there. It's not hard to find a neighbor that'll complain about anything. And then the interesting game gets played because they don't tell you who filed the complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And with something like that, you know, parking a vehicle, complaining about the library or the lemonade stand or whatever it is. I always want to get the names of those neighbors that go out there and complain. But the big RVs, they kind of do look bad. So listen, text us 580-580. Before the end of the show, we'll get back into this topic. Should you be able to park? This is not based on Ottawa, based on the city of Guelph debating this earlier in the week. Apparently, we have a similar rule banning it. Should you be able to park big trailers and RVs and boats in your driveway?
Yeah, and I'd love to know who, if anyone's, you know, actually been fined or warned, because I'd like to believe that, you know, if a bylaw does come out there, they're not just issuing you a ticket right away. They're probably going to say, look, you got
to go find a spot to park it.
Yeah, can you move this here? Can you go, like, storage? Whatever. I'd like to believe that would be the case and that they're not just ripping in there, handing out fines. But I'm with you. I'd like to know which neighbor is saying what. And if, you know, a neighbor does file a complaint, I'd like to at least believe as well they'd have the courage or, you know,
to put their name towards it,
or to just go and warn, hey, can you please move it? It is blocking the way, before they called bylaw. At least if
people would rather bylaw deal with that confrontation. That's the thing. Nobody wants to do it.
Oh man,
nobody wants to do it. They want bylaw to take the bullet for them. You know, we roll our eyes at bylaw a lot, but that becomes a lot of the problem. It's just neighbors that don't want to talk to each other and go out there and deal with it. I think if you. But I'm just thinking, if I walked around my neighborhood, I can find enough, not full-blown RVs, but I can find enough, like, camping trailers and boats parked in a driveway. I honestly didn't really think anything of it until today. And listen, you have my word, I won't be calling bylaw on anybody. I think it's an interesting, story. But unless there's, you know, a real vision issue, you know, if you're blocking and there's a corner and I'm worried kids are going to get hit by a car when they're out there, totally different conversation. Mm-hmm. But unless you're having that, I'm not even raising an eyebrow at it, let alone calling bylaw. So 580-580, should that be allowed? Should you be allowed to park things like camping trailers and RVs and boats in your driveway? Because the city of Guelph tried to say, yeah, let it be a free-for-all. Council had wanted nothing to do with that and suspended that bylaw review on a vote earlier this week. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. We'll go all night, just stepping with a woman
I love. All my troubles standing up when I'm in your eyes. You're listening to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Yeah,
Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll, The Morning Rush. We talked about this story a bit yesterday. This National Post headline said everyone's complaining about seasonal allergies. What gives? And I was getting a bit cocky. I said, this year, you know, the odd sneeze, but it actually hasn't been that bad for me. And then this morning, some pretty intense sneezing right in the morning coming in. I thought, I spoke too soon. But anyway, all good on that front. But yeah, apparently it's not just in your head. Things may be getting worse. Daniel Coates is on the line, director of the Aerobiology Research Labs. And Daniel, if things are apparently getting worse, not just in people's heads.
Well, actually, this year is a little bit more like you had said. It's a bit more of a normal year this year. But overall, across Canada, we do see higher pollen levels year over year over year. So it is getting worse on the global scale, but this year was not as bad as last year in the Ottawa region.
Okay, fair enough. So what's the worst thing for what really causes people's allergies to spring in? Is it the trees? Is it the grass? Is it the flowers?
Well, it's a very personal thing. Usually trees is a really bad season for most people. And then this week I was coaching soccer and the boys were coming off the field and they were all short of breath and some of them were sneezing and they're like, grass. And that's what we're in right now. We're in grass season. But in about a month or so, we're going to hit a pretty bad weed season. So we do expect ragweed to be a little bit higher than normal in the Ottawa region this year.
Now, when we talked about this just a little bit yesterday in this story that was out there, we got a couple of people texting in asking me to find somebody to ask. And you're here now, so let's do it. Is the fact that municipalities don't treat weeds as much as they used to, and we've banned some chemicals, we had a couple of people convinced that is why allergies are at an all-time worst level. What's your reaction to that?
There is some truth to that. Cities like to plant male trees over female trees because they don't have flowers or fruits or anything like that. So it's easier to maintain. And with the elimination of certain pesticides and things like that that usually treat weeds, you are going to see weeds and trees flourish more. But there's also the fact that we're having warmer weather, longer periods of warmer weather. And that's also dramatically affecting how pollen is exposed in the air and that we're getting more and more concentrations of it.
Is it that the pollen, like that it's showing up earlier in the season or that it's lasting longer?
It's showing up earlier in the season because we're getting a longer, warmer season, but it's also just lasting longer too. Compared to we have over 30 years of data and it's constantly showing that we're getting more pollen. And a lot of that would be attributed to those factors that we just talked about.
So you're saying that here in Ottawa, it's kind of a more normal year. Where in the country is it really bad right now?
Actually, in Western Canada, compared to last year, it's been worse. Places like Alberta, British Columbia, Saskatchewan. But last year was a very unique year in the eastern part of Canada. If you recall, we were wearing shorts in early April last year. We had a very, very warm season, and so that really attributed to really high pollen concentrations, where this year it was a bit more of a normal sort of cooler spring, and that's why we're calling it more of a normal or moderate season this year in the Ottawa region. But overall, as I said before, we're getting more and more pollen year and year over year.
When I moved here about 10 years ago, I had a couple of people tell me, just you wait. It's a valley here. Your allergies are going to be a nightmare. I thought, whatever. I don't really deal with allergies. And then that first spring, I'm like, ooh, they were right. And I mean, it's not, for me personally, not too bad. It's manageable. But there's definitely a noticeable increase. Is that just in our heads or is Ottawa kind of a hot spot just based on geography?
Well, based on the geography of the land, we'll get more pollen sort of settle in the air in our region than, say, other areas. But Ottawa is not considered special or elite in the terms of how much pollen we see in any season.
So ride us, take us through the summer. What are we going to be dealing with here? You mentioned the trees and the pollen and stuff, but kind of timelines on a more normal summer for what we can expect here.
Yeah, so we're basically at the tail end of tree season at this point in time. We had a pretty bad birch season. A lot of the other trees were a little bit more normal, We just finished Pine, which was all that yellow stuff everybody saw in their cars and in on their patio furniture. Yeah. And now we're getting into the grasses. So we're the grasses are flourishing right now, but we'll see all the weeds like nettles and ragweed and those types of weeds start popping up soon. Ragweed's probably about 3 or 4 weeks away, but we're seeing some of the other ones like cattails, nettles, etc.
I always see the one poor guy when I'm out walking my dog about once a week who has to cut his grass with a mask on. And I'm like, this guy,
yep.
he's prepared for the pandemic because he's had that mask for a long time. But, you know, it's interesting to see how some people deal with things a lot differently than others. And this poor guy just can't even deal with just that small yard there. He was struggling.
Yeah, it's actually ironic because that's one of our tips and tricks to help minimize pollen on your overall health. Is to wear a mask whenever you're doing outside chores. Another thing, like take a walk after it rains, or wearing wraparound sunglasses helps to keep it out of your eyes. Just simple tricks like that. But the best thing to do is to know what's in the air. And you can do that by checking out the Weather Network pollen forecast, or by downloading our Allergy Sufferers app.
Potentially stupid question, but how do you know what's affecting you? I guess, is that like more of a go to a doctor type thing, or can you, if you can figure out when your symptoms are worse, you could probably figure out what type of pollen is causing you those issues.
Absolutely. Keeping a calendar of when you were feeling miserable or when you were having an allergy attack can help allergy sufferers figure out what they're allergic to. And a lot of people use our app to do that. They kind of monitor what's in the air and when they were feeling bad in the calendar features. But definitely talking to your doctor and an allergist is what we always recommend, because allergies is a very personal thing. Some people can react at very low levels. Well, myself, who's not an allergy sufferer, sometimes when it's really, really high levels of, say, birch pollen, I might feel a little bit stuffed up as well.
All right. And the app is just available in the App Store. What are we looking for here?
Yeah, it's available in the Apple App Store and the Google App Store, and there's a free version and paid version. It's for the real allergy sufferer who's allergic to multiple things at very ranging levels, because they can see everything that's in the air, including outdoor molds and spores.
So does that work based on, I guess, geography, where you are, and then time of year, and then tells you exactly kind of what's out there right now?
Exactly. Our forecasts are over 80% accurate. Mainly because we collect data from across Canada. We have 30 locations across Canada, and we collect data every single day of the season, and we have over 30 years of prior data. So what we do is we put it into our artificial intelligence system. We also monitor it with our own eyes and our experience, and our forecasts are over 80% accurate. So you know you're getting very accurate pollen data when you look at the Weather Network or our app.
Love it, Daniel. Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Daniel Coates, the director of the Aerobiology Research Laboratories. And if you want to find that app, I just searched it. That's exactly what you got to search at the App Store, Aerobiology Research Laboratories. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Trending today with Matt Harris.
I'm hosting the show this morning here on the Morning Rush. So Corey Price is here with a look at what's trending this morning. And bit of a heavy topic for sure, but definitely a celebrity that's in the news.
Yeah.
No doubt about that.
Yeah, a bit of a more serious topic, as you said, but R. Kelly has been under a lot of scrutiny. Many charges against him, court cases relating to sexual abuse that had been alleged to folks that were underage over a long period of time. He is now facing 30 years in prison in a New York court after an extended trial into that. And it's just sort of taking a look at what the reaction to that was like, because this has been a process that's been going on for years. And there are also charges in place in a variety of other states that they'll have to figure out after this is already done. So this is just sort of step one. And we heard from a few victims yesterday sort of following up with what the results here mean after such an extended sort of protracted period of trying to get something out of that. The first that we have a clip of here is from Lizette Martinez.
I personally, this happened to me a long time ago. I was 17. I'm 45 today. I never thought that I would be here to see him be held accountable for the atrocious things that he did to children. I don't know what else to say except that I'm grateful. I'm grateful for today. And I'm grateful that Robert Sylvester Kelly is away, will stay away, and will not be able to harm anyone else.
And that's a sentiment, too, that from another victim that was named, because, you know, in some cases they won't use names, they'll use pseudonyms, but a few were named. And then Javonte Cunningham, similar sentiment.
I started this journey 30 years ago. I was 14 years old when I encountered Robert Sylvester Kelly. There wasn't a day in my life up until this moment that I actually believed that the judicial system would come through for black and brown girls. I stand here very proud of my judicial system, very proud of my fellow survivors, and very pleased with the outcome. 30 years did he do this, and 30 years is what he got.
And so this is something that obviously has been going on for a long time. And as I mentioned too, there's going to be other lawsuits that still need to be worked through and charges in other states. So it's 30 in this case, but one thing, and actually just so we're going to go to clip 4 instead of 3, but the defense lawyer for R. Kelly, whose name is Jennifer Bongean, says that, you know, the ruling has been passed down, but they're not done with it yet.
We were prepared for it, and we are now prepared to fight this appeal. For us, it's just the beginning of the fight, frankly.
So, you know, you think it's over, and then, you know, the defense side sort of saying he had a very, you know, difficult childhood, faced abuse as well, etc., and thinks that it should be closer to something like 10 years. They say that it's a life sentence if he gets 30 because he's already 55. But I mean, you know, I'm sure that doesn't mean a lot to the victims who were there. So we'll see how that shakes out. But
yeah, it'd be interesting to follow it. And I mean, has the legal right to an appeal for sure.
For
but
sure.
There's
yeah.
a lot of just terrible things that went on there. And it's good to finally see something being done about it, because for a while it was just totally ignored. Right. And
yeah.
As it was going on, there was some pretty big hints looking back.
Yeah, and then it was
happening.
A bit of a media circus in the middle where, you know, he was getting interviews and sort of making a very big public show of trying to defend himself, and then, you know, that sort of takes away from...
Yeah, and then there was the documentary that sort yeah. of had us all going, whoa, like, we were dealing with some serious stuff here.
Yeah.
Yeah, heavy topic for sure, but important and trending nonetheless. Just a quick update here before we end, though, on stories that we were talking about in trending a while back in September. Remember, we were following the case of a couple that had gone basically on a van trip, and she was doing kind of video entries on her Instagram and on her YouTube page. Her name is Gabby Petito. His name was Brian Laundry. And when she went missing and he came back and acted like nothing happened, and then he went on a camping trip and he disappeared as well, a lot of questions, right? They ended up finding both the bodies. Their theory was that he had killed her and then eventually went back into different wooded area and killed himself. Well, this week his family released his family's lawyer released an 8-page note that they say he wrote in a notebook and then put in a waterproof bag, and it was found near where his body was found. And basically in that he says that, yes, he did kill her, but he killed her as a mercy killing, because he said that they were coming back from a hike one night and they were running through trying to get back to the car before it got dark. And they ran through like a stream or a body of water of some kind, small river, stream, whatever it might be, and which was very cold. He got out and he had heard something, looked behind. She had fallen and hit her head and was knocked unconscious. And he says he tried to carry her back while she was wet because she had fallen in the stream. They got as far as they could. She was obviously in bad shape. He stopped, started a fire. And when she came to and realized that he says he realized that she wasn't in good shape, and it was a mercy killing. That was what was released by the family lawyer. I, for what it's worth, don't believe a word of that. Interesting story, and maybe we'll never fully know the truth, but that sounds like a desperate plea from a desperate person in there. Interesting strategy by the family's lawyer to go out and release that, and I guess they think that they can win some of the public support on that before the civil case goes in. And then, I mean, I guess if that's the picture you want to paint, you get out ahead of it. As you can imagine, her family is very upset about the fact that that was released publicly before the court proceedings, but something to follow along as that court case works its way through. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Matt Harrison this morning, the Morning Rush. Good morning. Thanks for being here. It's Thursday before a long weekend. Big day in the city tomorrow for sure. It's always a big day on Canada Day. And this year there's signs of another freedom rally of some type. And Ottawa police have been adamant that they're on it and that it's safe to come downtown. I made the case earlier, and I don't know that this is anyone's fault when I say this, but the more I hear public officials saying that it's safe, it actually makes me a bit nervous to come downtown. I think that might be just a natural reaction. And I'm basing that on nothing at all. So I'm not saying that I believe it's unsafe. That's not my point. They're trying to be reassuring, but the fact that we need to be reassured, I guess, makes me nervous. And maybe that's just human nature, but a lot to unpack here for what's going on downtown over the weekend. Chris Lewis is CTV's public safety analyst and former OPP commissioner. Good to have you on again, Chris. Appreciate your time today.
Good to talk to you, Matt.
And I guess you can sort of appreciate that nervous energy that might not be based on anything, like I said, but it's hard to convince people, you know, if you hear it's safe too often, maybe that gets in your head. Maybe that's just a natural reaction.
For sure it is. As human beings, we're going to react to stuff like that. I don't know how long you've been in Ottawa, but, you know, people there have enjoyed Canada Day, look forward to it every year. Family events and, you know, other than some drunken partiers, it really hasn't been problematic. From a public perspective, no trucks honking, no bouncy castles, what we saw in January and February. So that's a different year, and some people are going to be apprehensive about that, and I can see it.
You and I talked about this last time. I talked to you before what happened, or I guess as what happened in February was going on, and I had said, you know, the problem that police face is if things go off tomorrow and there are no real issues, people are going to say, well, look, you overreact to that. But they leave out the fact that there was a lot of preparation and a lot of work by a lot of people to make sure that happened.
For sure. And it's going to be a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario. And that's almost always the case with police. Unfortunately, that's the finger that gets pointed at them. You overreacted or you underreacted. So let's just hope it works out perfectly, and they've got the preparation in place to prevent stuff from happening, and they'll take the sorry you overreacted crap and move on. But they've got a different scenario than they had in the winter in that the weather's different, so that's going to draw more people to the streets. But I think the vast majority of people in Canada Day have been doing this forever. They love the city of Ottawa. My daughter and her hubby are going up there from Trenton. And just to have fun with friends and not, you know, get in fights or protests, that'll be the vast majority of people, as it is every year, and Ottawa deals with it every year. But this year, of course, you're going to have, at the other end of the spectrum, some people that want to cause problems, and they're going to try and draw some of those partiers into the crowd with them to cause problems, protest to have the prime minister removed and all this stuff that's not going to happen. And that's where the big planning and resource issues are for police.
They've done a good job, when I say they, I mean Ottawa police, of warning people that listen, we're not going to tolerate any illegal behavior, like no warnings. We're just doing that. And that type of upfront communication to me seems like a good strategy. But what's your read on that situation?
Absolutely. They're doing a good job of telling people, here are the rules. We didn't hear that in early or late January. There's going to be no warnings. They're already, in addition to the communication, they're carrying it out. They're towing vehicles, they're charging people, and they've got lots of resources in place. People are going to see them, and that's going to scare some off and not others, and they'll have the people to deal with those.
Obviously, people have a right to protest. It's a key part of our democracy. How do you balance that in a situation like this?
that's always the issue. You know, is a protest where they block a street off legal? Really, it isn't, because they're blocking off a street. But police have allowed that in the past and said, okay, like, you got a half hour, we'll be moving you on, or sometimes even more time than that. But it's always a balance. But if it gets violent, if it gets really unlawful, damage to property, assaults, things like that, that's different. You have to take action right away, and they just can't tolerate that stuff.
What kind of information do police rely on at times like this? Is it, open source type stuff? I mean, people aren't hiding the fact that they're coming to Ottawa. I saw videos on Facebook of, a big lot in Renfrew where people had the flags on their cars and they're getting ready to come out. But is it a lot of open source stuff, or is there a lot of things that kind of happen behind the scenes that we're maybe not aware of?
There's both, Matt. A lot of open source stuff. And so they've got people in from all the different agencies involved, OPP, RCMP, et cetera. They'll form what they call a joint intelligence group. And they're monitoring all the online stuff, and then, stuff from sources, stuff from people just calling in tips. They're watching certain players, knowing they may be problematic. So they're trying to see where are they, who are they, and who they're hanging out with. That all goes on behind the scenes. It's not a secret. It always has. And they know that. And then they put that all together and come up with assessments in terms of what the real threats are or aren't. And police have to plan around those threats to mitigate the problems that may occur.
What will you be watching for tomorrow to call tomorrow a success?
A lack of violence, of any damage being done, the people of Ottawa being totally inconvenienced versus some inconvenience because of traffic delays and things like that. So that will really, in essence, be the typical Canada Day in Ottawa. And so if anything else happens on top of that, we're going to see more and more police resources out and more conflicts between the police and the public. And then that's sad, and that, that is kind of deemed a failure by police, but hopefully not too big a one in terms of their ability to respond to it. I think they'll handle it well, and I think it's going to be a whole different game than we've seen in the past big ones like last February.
When you're on the ground in a time like this, best case scenario is you've got the people who are out to party on Canada Day in one corner enjoying their time, and the people that want to protest, they're there minding their own business. They, they're mad, they're waving their flags, whatever they might be, but they're not, they're not really hurting anyone if they're out doing that. It's when the two groups mesh together, obviously, in any protest, we get those counter protests together. How do you keep them apart? Is it just about forming kind of physical barriers and hope, trying to strategically keep them aside? And you, that would probably be how a lot of that friction would start, right? As if the counter protesters start interacting with each other.
For sure. It's keeping them physically, keeping them apart. And then you react towards the violent ones. So the counter-protesters, for example, in some protests, the people that are against the protests and show up end up getting in trouble because they try to fight with the protesters. And then the protesters look like, oh, we didn't do anything wrong, and we're the good guys, when in reality, they started the whole mess. So keeping them apart, dealing with them fairly, trying to have kind of a strong presence and take a strong stance, but you allow a couple little things maybe, and then you have to draw a line in the sand and say, that's it, you guys are going to jail. And that's when the fighting starts. Keeping them apart becomes a huge part of the issue for police and the challenge. And then, of course, they react as things happen from there.
Well, it seems like everybody is well prepared, and we just hope for the best. Chris, thanks for this. I always appreciate your insight.
Anytime, Matt, and have a great holiday weekend. Take care.
You as well. Chris Lewis, CTV's public safety analyst and former OPP commissioner. As police say, listen, they're ready. Safe to come downtown. Like I said, I think it's a bit of a natural reaction to have a bit of nervous energy about that, but they're telling people they've got it under control, and there's already that police presence we're seeing, right? I mean, the roads were blocked off in the downtown yesterday, and hopefully we're sitting there having that conversation that we just talked about, the fact that it's all overblown. And that doesn't mean that it wasn't warranted, like I said, but they're clearly prepared for something to possibly go down tomorrow. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
News Talk 580 CFRA's $1,000 Minute. Brought to you by Alpine Credits. Homeowners get approved.
All right, Roger in Barrhaven, you ready to win $1,000?
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. So we'll ask you 10 questions in a minute. Everyone you get right is $10. Get all 10, you get $1,000. You got to answer the question we asked you. You good to go?
I'm going to try.
All right, let's do it here. We'll start the clock after I read the first question. According to Daniel Coates, who was on the show earlier, which type of pollen is at its worst right now?
Do I have a pass?
Okay, who is the head of the Ottawa-Gatineau Hotel Association?
Holy geez, no idea.
How many flights per day is Air Canada canceling this summer?
I read that this morning. I think my brain is still asleep. Next.
Okay, Richard Krause did his movie reviews earlier. What was his favorite movie of the year so far?
No idea.
Which city council voted against a review of its RV parking bylaw this week?
Let's say Ottawa.
The ArriveCan app will be used by the border until at least which date?
Oh, geez. These are way harder than I thought. No idea.
Who's the lead actress in the movie The Forgiven?
No clue.
What's the forecasted low tonight?
12.
Who is the transport minister?
I should listen to the news more carefully. No idea.
How many days has Daisy been waiting for her passport?
Probably more than the answers I got right.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. You know, Steve was pumping you up. He's like, this guy sounds really confident. He's going to do it. And you gave it a good try, though. We'll see how you did.
Steve's nicer than you, I guess, Matt.
I guess so, man. All right, Corey's going to run through the answers here.
Yeah, so we've got a few passes. So I'm just going to rattle off the first few, and I'll just flag if you passed or when we got an answer. So we've got, according to Daniel Coates, the allergy expert we had on, which type of pollen is at its worst right now? You had passed. It's tree pollen. Who is the head of the Ottawa-Gatineau Hotel Association? You passed. It's Steve Ball. How many flights per day is Air Canada canceling in the summer? You had passed. It's 154. What is Richard's favorite movie of the year so far? You had passed. It's Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. Which city's council voted against a review of their RV parking bylaw? You said Ottawa. It's Guelph. The ArriveCan app will be used at the border until at least what date? You had passed. It's September 30th. Who is the lead actress in The Forgiven? When Richard was talking about it, you passed. It was Jessica Chastain. What's the forecast low temperature tonight? You said 12. It's 19. Who is the Minister of Transport? You passed. It is Omar Al-Ghabra. And how many business days has Daisy been waiting for her passport? You weren't sure. It's 61.
Roger, that's the first shout-out we've had in a while, so we appreciate that. I think that should be celebrated.
I'm here for you guys.
That's right.
It's
not an easy thing to do. People can usually pull out one of those, but thanks for being a good sport about it. We appreciate it.
No thanks, problem. Roger.
Roger in Barrhaven, starting the long weekend off with a chance to win $1,000 and going 0-10, which is not an easy thing to do. There are a couple of tough questions in there.
A couple of them were not the easiest. Some of them, I thought a couple were a little bit more like gimmies, but I will say what I'll commend is knowing you don't know is a good skill in this game. Knowing to get to the next one.
Yeah, just throw me the next question, Corey, and hopefully that one goes a little bit better than the one before. So not the best all round. Not the best at all. It's the Morning Rush. We'll take a quick break here. We'll have news, traffic, weather. We'll look on some of the movies that are playing here in the long weekend. And I guess we can jump back into the RV situation in Guelph. Are they off base? Should you be allowed to park an RV or a camping trailer or a boat in your front yard? So I don't think it looks the best, but I don't overly have a problem with it. It's your property. But then again, we don't let you do a lot of things on your property just because you own it. So we can weigh in there at 580-580 and shoot us a text. It's the last show of the week. We've got Canada Day coming up here in the city, and we're in a bit of a long weekend mode, so we'll get some movie reviews to get you ready for the long weekend. Coming up next, The Morning Rush.
Inbox. Everybody's talking about on News Talk 580 CFRA.
But check this as we end the show. A lot of people not happy with me over some of the commentary on these protests downtown, and that's fair. But this one tweet made me laugh a bit. Double flag bearing truck just ran a red light in front of me. Are they protesting the rules of the road? So there we go. A lot of people thinking we're overblowing what's happening on the downtown core this weekend. And I've got, you know, it is what it is. If you're the only way to know if you overblew it is just to ride it out, right? And the thing is if nothing happens, you're going to say it was all overblown and you won't care. You have no real way of gauging that. You just don't. On should RVs and large trailers be parked on roads? How weird are you that an RV is an eyesore, Snowflake? I walk around to admire the nice RVs. No issue for me. Rural, who cares? In the small yards, yes, we do need some rules here. Bob in Barrhaven, and I would probably tend to agree with that one. So a couple of people getting progress on their passports. I applied April 1st at Service Canada. Yesterday, I got my daughter's old passport back, but not the new one. It says it's coming by courier. The new ones are supposed to come to that. But if you applied on April 1st, that gives me a bit of hope for mine because I dropped mine in the mailbox on April 2nd. So there you go. That one came from Shannon on a passport office. And there you go. Large trailers, no, pet peeve of mine. Allowing street parking on both sides of a residential street creates a safety issue for kids who can rush out, leaving little space for moving cars. Yeah, they've started to do the banning of that on some of the more main fares, but smaller driveways, smaller streets still have, you know, people parked on both sides and in there.
I've also always just found that annoying, if I can chime in for a second, like trying to drive down a street where people are parked on both sides because they're so narrow already.
Yeah.
Hate it. Not a fan.
Yeah, definitely a problem. A lot of people don't agree with my take earlier this morning that this guy who's marching in to come to the war memorial, because of the fact that he was in the military, doesn't, to me, make him some kind of voice on freedom. It just doesn't. So there's this narrative being pushed by people who are waving the flag, and I've struck a nerve with some people here, and it is what it is. But the fact that you served in the military doesn't make you the voice on freedom. You have an opinion. It's a free country. You're entitled to have that. And, you know, thank you for your service. But this narrative being pushed by people who are supporting the Freedom Convoy by saying this guy fought in a civil war, so he knows how much of our freedoms are being taken away. That's your opinion. I hear that and I roll my eyes. And maybe you think I'm totally off base by that, but can we stop pointing to this guy's military service as if he's some kind of voice on freedom? He's rallying around a cause. He's got his supporters. That's fine. I hear that and don't really think that's much of an authority on anything. And judging by some of the response today, that's a bit of a controversial take. But that's, you know, my message out there to those conservative MPs that welcomed him into Parliament Hill. Yes. I guess earlier this week it was, or late last week. You know, I hear that and I just sort of go, all right, well, whatever. That's where we're at. And that's not to put down his military service. It's not. Thank you for your service. That doesn't make you the expert on freedom. It's interesting, but you're just one voice in the millions of people who served in our military over time. And you can take that however you want. Some people are taking that as gospel. And I'm not even, this isn't even actually so much a conversation on him. It's, to me, the people who are rallying around that as if it's some sort of point that needs to be taken seriously. I don't think it is. I actually think it's a bit of an outrageous comparison to make. I'm not seeing the point that you're making there.